Gerald Carr is a man who has worked on affordable standard list, Utah list, and revamped, revised Autodesk's list when he worked there for a year. So he has a lot of the list experience, and he's here to tell us about LLOG. Thank you. Harold?
So I'm going to talk about Lava, and that's always the first order of business, how you pronounce it. So I actually did want to call it Lava, but LAVA.org was already taken. You know, our four-letter words were gone a long time ago. So I had an L, and it seems to be available. Matter of fact, when you do a Google search, there's not much under Lava. So actually, there's getting to be more, but it's all in Spanish. So what does Lava mean? Like taking a bath or something?
With one L.
And you also can pronounce it Yava if you really like the Spanish way. So either way is fine. And I work for Sun Microsystems, but on the slide I put it in lowercase and parentheses because this has nothing to do with Sun. This is not funded, sanctioned, or otherwise representing Sun here at this moment. Although that said, I had to get permission from my manager to even submit to the conference. And she said, well, as long as you can get somebody big in Sun to say, you know, it's okay, then I'm up there, it's okay. And so I talked to Gilad Baraka, who's the basically the guy that heads the Java language specification now. And Gilad said, yes, I think it's a good idea, go for it. If anybody asks me, I'll tell them not only should you do it, you know, it's great. So he was behind it. Sun's actually now giving kind of a mini push to host other languages on the VM. It's always been possible, and you know, there's millions of them out there, but Sun's never really officially done anything about it. So now they're actually trying to be more friendly, and I think that's somewhat under pressure from the COR, because that was their kind of starting point. And the software is all available, open source at lava.org. So the main point of Lava is that it's not Common Lisp, and it's not Scala, and it's not another whatever language in Java. As much as I appreciate Kava and other efforts like that, and learned a lot and used those systems, that it's not what it is. And so I don't need a special notation or forward function calls or anything like to access Java. It just is Java, but in this prefix notation. And the data types are just Java data types. There's no other set of data types. So basically, that's kind of what it looks like. It's a real simple with procedures. It also has classes. And I'll talk about this more, but you know, you see try, catch, and finally, just like you'd see it in Java. You see the packages, and the only difference is you surround them by friends and get rid of the extra semicolon. And then it works. So my initial motivation for doing this in 1997 was, you know, like I'd done a lot of Lisp work and really enjoyed it, but then got stuck in C++ like so many of us. And when Java came along, I said, you know, it's kind of what I do. It was funner to program at one time, but I need more. So I started using Kava and Skij and Silk /JScheme. But the trouble with when I was using those in 97 is that I kept having to get to Java. Like if I had a scheme stream, because scheme streams are mutable, whereas Java strings are immutable. So I'd have to translate the strings from each other types. And other data types would be the same thing. And then so it just got to be, they didn't operate. That was the main thing. They did. In 97, they didn't interoperate between the two languages very well. So I thought, well, I'll roll my own. And the idea was I'll have direct access to Java plus a few features from, you know, mainly procedures and macros and things like that, and lists. So I did that, and I've been using it for a lot of years just for my own stuff. And as I wrote this paper, I started realizing that I still had a lot of schemisms, which you'll see later in the language. And I said, if I really am going to go all the way of where I'm claiming, I actually need to make really, really a one-to-one version of Java in Lisp syntax. And you'll see what I mean on that. And the kind of idea there is maybe there's an opportunity here now. Just like C++ types could easily migrate to Java because the syntax was somewhat similar, maybe Java types could migrate to the Lisp world if you give them something that's, you know, pretty much identical with just a little bit of shifting of operators to the front. And maybe there's something there, I don't know. And so the idea is, and maximum leverage Java. It looks like Java for the most part, and hopefully it'll start working with, you know, IDEs and debuggers and everything else. So you get the Unicode for free, somewhat, and all the libraries, which is really the reason, the initial motivation. A lot of people do this in the first place, just to get their hands on the libraries and the language they like, and the Java. So the outline of the talk is, I'm going to give an overview of the language, and then the bulk of the talk is going to be about the language design, because it seems like it's pretty simple, but there's a lot of questions at each stage of the way. And then I'm going to give a brief tour of the current implementation, but the idea here today is not so much the implementation, it's kind of plan a meeting, and that's like, because I can't, probably can't pull this off by myself, but the idea is, let's do a Java in the syntax. Take what I have, whatever, instead of another language. Just an idea, and then ideas for future work. So here's kind of a starting point of what it would look like, if it does look like, and that's on the left, you see some Java code, which is basically an abstract class, and on the right, you have the Lava version of it. And as you can see, it's pretty much, you know, I think a person that has written Java would feel kind of pretty comfortable with that. Because just move things to prefix, and you're pretty much done. We'll talk more about the details later. That's just to kind of give you a flavor of what it looks like. And then there's this one that we already saw. This version is like when you're defining classes. And this one here is defining a procedure. So I said, you know, it is possible to have procedures in classes. And so we see here, basically, you know, this is surrounded by an outer let. And I'm defining a procedure, which is going to look at this bomb variable. And if it's less than zero, it's going to tell you to give up. Otherwise, it's going to return the result in the list. Or if there's an arithmetic expression that divides by zero, then you'll get this. And so running this is just what you'd expect if you're a list type. But it also is very close to what you would like if you were a Java type in terms of try, catch, and finally. And then you get the list of procedures added. So moving on, this is a little bit of what Java looks, Lava looks like, but also some of the motivation for doing it. And that is like for calling new and calling virtual and static methods. In Java, that's the top, and the Lava version of it is in the bottom. And the idea is it's very simple mental translation. And what I was trying to avoid was this. And this is the same thing. One's written in JSCHEME. JSCHEME is a very nice implementation that runs on Java also. And what they do is this, what they call Java dot notation. So the constructor, if you have a dot at the end of the name, then that means it's a constructor. And notice their import takes strings. And then this one's arm bare common list. And this one, when you call Java, well, you got to do a little work. Which, if you write macros, you can hide most of that work. But the fact is, it's not a direct thing. So if we compare those two with Lava, that's the idea. That's the main point of Lava, is it's close to Java as possible. Here's the same thing with virtual and static fields. So up here you have the Java version of it, so you import some sort of class, create a version of it, and then set some of its fields. And in Lava, it pretty much looks the same, and the field set is just the name, but as a procedure. And then for getting a static field, which is file.path separator, I actually give that right now as just a call, a procedure. JSCHEME does that by putting a dollar at the end. And, you know, whenever I see dollar signs in a language meaning semantics, you know, I run for the hills. So the idea is, you know, no special syntax, no foreign function code. And the way that's done is basically with a reflective invocation. And this kind of shows you what's going on, and that's right here, just by typing foo.bar, that creates a Java string. Not a scheme string, not a commonless string, not language X string, a Java string. And so immediately when it has that, without saying anything else, its methods become available. So I can say substring or for, which gives me bar, which returns another string, and then I can call two lowercase, and so I actually get the result of bar. And to show you another difference there, in Skidge, which was another language that Michael Travers, who's here at the conference, did a nice implementation, he did, to invoke things, he had this invoke method here, and peak static to get things. And so basically for this little example here, you see the difference between the two. And once again, I wanted to avoid the peak and poke static type of stuff. But I also want a lot of procedures to play well with Java methods. In other words, if I define a procedure, I don't want it to shadow a valid Java method on an object. And the way this works is, for instance, let's say if I define two uppercase to of x to always call two lowercase to always call two uppercase, then when I call the same thing I saw a moment ago, I get uppercase bar when I call two lowercase, which is sometimes not what you want. And so the idea is I have these what I call reflective invocation definition forms, which if you don't define it with an explicit lambda, then what happens if I call two lowercase on a string, it'll first look up the method call and use that. So I get bar, but if I do it on anything else, and this doesn't have a two lowercase method, which doubles don't have a two lowercase method, then instead it will use the implicit lambda body here and run that, so I get the minus 3.4. And I'll go into more details about that. So this is just the overview right now. Package import system. So basically it does what you'd expect with Java. Here I have package, and I import the date format, and I define a local constructor for this thing, and then a function called what zone. And then I go into another package and import the one I just defined. And so if I say what zone, a new date format, both of which were defined in this top package, I get back Mountain Standard Time, which I happen to live in the mountain, so that's the reason it's Mountain Standard. But if I say what zone of date format.get instance, that's not going to be defined because it's not in this package. I didn't import it into this package. And that's pretty much what you'd expect from Java also. So, and then it has macros, and really should say def macro there to define syntax. So it basically has non-hygienic macros at this time, but adding the hygienic is just a matter of doing it, right?
Yep.
If I abandon my family, I can pull it off. which they claim I already have done, so. Okay, so now the next part of the talk. This is the bulk of the talk here, the language design. So, how have I got what I've got so far, and how will I get the rest of the way there? Because it basically is a running system. But every step of the way, let's start with the real simple stuff, comments. So, originally when I did this, I had semicolons as a comment because, semicolon was wired into my neuron structure, from so like probably all of us. And, but Java uses double slashes. So which should I do there? If I really want Java people to like this thing, I probably should do what they're used to. So that's a thought. Same thing with block comments. Do I support this, or do I maybe put a paren in front of it and support it, or just have some other form for a block comment? Or Java doc. You definitely want to support Java doc because you get so much for free. solid, you know, documentation generation tools. So how would you do that? Same thing, maybe a prefix version of this or something. The trouble with the prefix versions is that something like this, more dot, 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 spaces between them, is going to cause the reader problem because it's thinking, you know, it's reading a cons, cons, which doesn't work. So maybe you put it in strings. Anyway, this is like, and the other another problem with this is if you do use this like double slash and everything, well then the reader gets more complicated because suddenly you can't use read to do your comment parsing for you. Because it's now got to understand this slash slash stuff. So right off the bat, simple comments, you actually have a lot of decisions to make. Same thing with identifiers. If you're going to generate bytecode, you've really got to follow the Java conventions for identifiers, otherwise you're not going to be able to call them from Java. And however, if you really want to be friendly with list types, you know, we're kind of used to asterisks around special variables and sometimes hyphens between parts of the words. So maybe you should support that too. And the nice thing about hyphens between words is if you use that, you know they can never be a name of a method, so then you can define those as those direct lambdas rather than the reflective invocation lambdas. So, another issue to deal with literals, same idea. There's a bunch of reserved words, and Lava basically reserves all the Java keywords, and also has a few of its own, which you'd expect, and mainly define and lambda and quote and let, which causes problems because if somebody, if you want to call quote, a quote method on some object that your friend has written, not necessarily, matter of fact, it's probably not your friend, it's probably somebody you have no contact with, and you've got to use their third-party package. Well, you're probably going to have to use reflection to make that call, direct Java reflection, because it's already shadowed by the Lava keywords. And this is another simple one, the Boolean literals. You know, if you use Java or JSchema in the head, you're going to use C-sharp and sharp-T and sharp-F, but if you're a Java type, you're really pretty much used to writing true and false. So that's what Lava does, it just says true and false, so it is Java. And the idea is to settle, this is kind of like the guiding design philosophy, and that is settle all design decisions in favor of Java, even if you don't like it, because of the idea of making it easy for Java programmers to come to Lisp. There is a problem there, though, and this is the one like the character notation. Now, that's just one. You really want quote. You really want the quote reader method. So, in this case, maybe Java with Lava, and it does right now, uses the standard Lisp representation for a character because that's just asking for too much, you know. Quote's got to be there if you're using Lisp. And operators, that's another area. And that's the Java is on the left. Just a direct prefix translations in the middle. And this is where I noticed, and I noticed this when I wrote the paper, and it's like, it's amazing what your background does to you. And that is, right now what's in Lava is everything on the right. Because it just happened. You know, when I was adding the AND operator, well, of course it's AND, because I've seen that so many times in the list systems that I've built and used. But once again, if I wanted to settle in the design decision to favor Java, then I really, and I plan to do this actually this weekend, change all of this so it really is the Java operator notation. And at first it gets a little jarring seeing ampersand to mean and, because you know, there's something flowing or relaxing about the word and, whereas whatever that squiffy ampersand is. But there is a benefit to that, and that's having these, you know they can never be Java method calls, so you're never going to, method names, so you're never going to shadow some Java method names, whereas these would, if someone had an AND method in their class, then you start to shadow that. So there is some benefits to doing it that way also. Types and values and variables. This basically shows you some more Java code. And the idea here is to show you that you can put types in the definitions of the methods and also the return types. And we'll go into detail right now about that. First of all, let's look at this. Where is it? This one here, this private static int num created is 0. Okay, so if that was in Java, it would say private static int num created equals 0, which is right here. Yeah, there it is. So how do we represent that in Lava? So this is kind of like the most direct one, but then you have kind of an infix thing. Say, well, no, we're supposed to be prefix, and we want to be consistent. So maybe, well, this is not quite an orderly thing. So if I then say, okay, it's prefix, here's the one. So then let's move it in ahead, but that's kind of weird. It just doesn't look quite right because of all the modifier, the typing and the modifiers. So maybe this is the best one here. You put equals in the front, the modifiers, and then the name. Or, and then why even have the type? Because we're in Lava anyway, and you really don't need the types. So there's a whole bunch of, basically, this is like showing like a lot of the possibilities. And right now, I've ended up with this one. And because I actually do want to preserve the type information, because I really don't need that when I'm calling from Lava procedures. But if I'm going to call the classes defined with Lava from Java code, I really do want the type information. So so the type information stays, and the only thing that disappears is the equal sign, because given this, I just don't know where to put the equal sign.
Have you considered using keyword arguments?
Yeah. Well, the minute I introduce keyword arguments, does Java have that?
Doesn't look like Java in that.
Yeah, see, that's the problem.
Putting colons
and, that, and that's exactly, I'm glad you asked it, though, because that's exactly the point. It's so easy, like, well, of course this is easy, keyword argument. Of course, you know, you should do like this combos. I've done this for, you know, 40 years. But that's the point, is I don't want it to be another language. I want it to be Java. So, same idea when you have methods. It starts out with this Java method here. And so here it is again. So here's the Java method, and maybe I can just say it this way with the return and without a type, return type. And as I said, I really want the return type, so when I call it from Java, I have that information. So that's great, but once again, I've left it out here. Here I've dropped the return because do I really want return? Because maybe this is one place where I would skip being Java, and that's everything's an expression, and when you reach the last expression in some tree, the evaluation, that's the value of that tree. So I've actually right now dropped return because it just seemed superfluous, but maybe that's a mistake. And these are all, you know, it's kind of funny. Each one of these teeny, teeny little decisions, after a while, adds up. And you end up with a language that's, what is it? And so maybe I've done the wrong thing because I should leave the return in. So right now what I have is I have public int get the types and the argument names and then just whatever the value is it would return it. Here's another small decision. On this method that we saw, we see that it just says throws these two exceptions. Well, maybe those should be, they look kind of weird floating. There's kind of like a loop, cumulus loop macro, right? They're just kind of floating there, no prefix involved.
But couldn't that be something like a declare?
Declare? Well, once again, if I say declare, it's not Java anymore, because Java doesn't have declare. That's always the thing. I want it to be Java.
Yeah, but you dropped the return, so it's not Java at all.
Yeah, exactly. I'll put it back.
Thank you.
Very good point. You know, I'm willing to do it in that time, so what have I done by doing that? So I probably should put it back. What I should probably do is support it, but for those in the know, you won't have to use it, right? So that's probably the way to go about that. So here's what I was saying here. It's like, should I have throws like this, or should I put parentheses around them? I guess if you're a hologram arc fan, then you'll, or a loop macro fan, then you'll want this version. And if you really want to make it easier on the parser, you probably want this version. But.
Well, it's also just for the human, because there's, you know, when does it end? The property of throws something, 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 X.
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
You want to have a sort of visual marker that it throws this gun. And so that's why I want the friends.
Actually, in this one, so I could, if all I was doing is getting like a value of a field, then you'd have exactly what you're saying. You'd have, if you do not have the parentheses, then all you'd have, you wouldn't know how to distinguish the field from the throw. Yeah. Good point. Okay, the friends go in. That's what I was hoping for today.
The next thing is the first expression, right? The last friend would be a choice. Yeah, disambiguating the beginning.
Right.
And also, if you're editing an Emacs, you want the endeavor to sort of
to help you out. Right.
But do not get totally confused.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was just aesthetically moving towards the Perrin version. Because I've never really liked the loop macro. And I know there was a version of the loop macro that was Lispy, and I wanted to use that one. But if I do that, if I add those Perrins there, then to be consistent, on the earlier versions of the inheritance I was showing for some that's in the paper, it just says, like, in a Java class, it looked like that. What it shows in the paper is I have public class point extends point base. Well, I probably should have put parens around the extends.
Well, you don't, this one, well, maybe, this one's a little different because it's optional. I mean, you'll have either extends appears next or not, and if it does, there's only one item because you can't extend more than one class.
But you can implement.
But implement would be.
Right, you want the, and you want those consistent. You can make it sort of optional, but I go with the maybe to add optional.
Yeah, I think, you know, both for return and for this type of thing, I would probably support the parentheses version and document that, and then allow it to be a little forgiving to people that don't care to use it. But once again, that's exactly what I'm trying to highlight, and that's the bulk of my talk, is saying these are all pretty simple, each one of those, but it's the net effect of all these pretty simple decisions that can really take the language in a very bizarre direction. And the next one has a little bit to do with curl. All right, you look good. Don't fall asleep. Basically, if I have introduced local variables in Java, I can just do it anywhere. You know, just whoops, what happened? There. I can just, at any time, you know, introduce some local variables. Well, should I do that with a traditional let? If you do, then you get the thing, you know, whenever you read a list paper, right, it always looks like that. And, or maybe we'll do what curl does, and that you say something like a let, and maybe with an equal sign, maybe not, but the let form, this paren here, closes this form, and it just means then everything that follows is now somehow in the scope of this binding. And there's no way that I know of that you show that there's an end of scope, is there?
You're right.
Okay, so.
Yes, but you don't need that. The end of the method or the end of the surrounding scope. Or
yeah.
As in Java.
Right, exactly. So if I wanted to be Java, so this, it gets hard though, because, you know, we tend to like these things. We introduce these lets sometimes in strange places to actually get some local scope that we want to get out of.
It is very important with macros.
Pardon me?
It's very important with macros to be able to do that.
All right. Well, you have to have a way to do it, but it doesn't have to be bundled with the let operator.
Right. Right. And with the question, well, I'm getting questions with this. So, okay, so I'm kind of leaning towards the curl approach because it's probably a little more appealing to Java types. But once again, it just kind of jars on you when you're used to Lisp and you see this let and suddenly it's closed and then just somehow the variables stick around.
Raise the issue. One of the best reason it seems, other than perhaps just to sort of psychologically bring Java programmers to Lisp or a Lispy language, is that a S-expression-based Java is then a substrate upon which you can build macros. But the design of the underlying syntax has a pretty strong effect. Like the more like this you make it, the easier it will be to write macros, because the macros don't have to understand this like sort of arbitrary syntax, right? It's all just building trees. Whereas something like this makes it now harder to write macros.
Right, yes. Exactly. Because suddenly it's not in the body of the macro anymore.
Yeah, some of these things, it seems like you could have two modes, and the translation back and forth between the two modes might not be all that hard.
Right.
And you just have to keep the hand. You can put it, you can even actively translate it back and forth, then you'd have something that was easier as an entry point for people. But then you had something that was better for macros or whatever. Most of them seem bidirectionally translatable.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably the right approach, and that's really, as the design philosophy, and that stick to be close to Java as possible. But for the list pipes, you can throw in a few things that you can load in a separate library or something, so you can do the things you know and love to do. But you wouldn't see that right away, and that way you can bring the Java guys along. So then there's the question of last call optimization, and that's that you really use the... One of the ideas, I want deep integration with Java, and when I say deep integration, I want to be able to use the IDEs and debuggers and have them pretty much not have to know anything special about this language and somehow work. But to do that, you really have to follow all the Java conventions at that point, the calling conventions. If you do that, well, then there goes last call optimization. So that's still a question. And same thing, do you implement break, continue, and return, or just provide something like call EP, which is the continuations with dynamic extent? Probably should do break, continue, and return. But for now, it has call EP because it's so much easier to deal with it in weekends. Here's another question, which I haven't dealt with. Anonymous classes. Java uses this a lot, particularly if you're doing security or GUIs. And how should this be represented? It's very bizarre, I just suddenly have to have a class broke up. Are you familiar with anonymous classes in Java? So
it's already this, but has enough parentheses.
Yeah, they're just curly brackets instead. So I'm not going to go into details of this, but when I start thinking about this, I realize, this is particularly... And everybody, actually, even most of the people that love Java say they hate the syntax. To get an anonymous function, you have to create a class, anonymous class, which has the method, which is then going to get called in the place that you want it called. It's not pretty. So that's a problem left to... readers. Now, here's probably the deeper issue than the syntax that I'm talking about, and that is the namespaces, as in list 1, 2, and such and such. And this kind of shows you an example where I have this field int foo, I have a method int foo, and I have a class in the same level, which is called foo. Now, if I call foo, it prints 3. If I call the method foo, it prints 4. If I then assign this local variable and call foo, I get 5. If I call new on foo and take its variable, I get 6. And if I call bar.foo, which is just a new, I get foo. So the idea is there's a namespace for fields, which is separate from the namespaces from methods. There's a namespace for classes, which I'm not sure if it's a separate namespace, but if you say new, then obviously it disambiguates from the other ones. So you're really going to have to do it right to figure out Java's namespace model and do the same thing. Right now, lobby is a list 1, and so you can't name fields and methods with the same name. So that was a tour of of the design, and give you a very brief tour of the implementation. I have 211, right? Completely over at 10.
Breaks over at 10. Breaks at 10.
Okay. So brief tour. And here's, I want to say something on that about the reflective implementation. Basically, the reflective implementation system I have is pretty much just like the one in Skidge. Skidge was the scheme in Java written by Michael Trevor. And but the biggest difference is how it's used. And that's instead of an explicit interface, which I showed you on a previous slide, where you call invoke to invoke a method on a function, it's just part of the variable lookup algorithm. And what it says is if you're looking up a variable, if it was bound with define, you know, foo to be lambda, well, it's just going to have that procedure there. But if it was defined with define open paren foo, close paren, and then some body, it's going to have a special thing called an RI placeholder. And if it's undefined, this, the lookup method will automatically bind it to this RI placeholder. And what that means is, this is the thing that I already showed, and that is that you have the float value, and if it's defined like this first one here, then depending on what I call it with, it will dispatch to the right method or lambda procedure. If I define it with a direct lambda, it will do it this way, and if I don't define it at all, it will automatically go and find a method name for you. How that is done is this magic code right here. And it's actually pretty simple. This, in a certain sense, is one of the best ideas of Lava, besides implementation, besides the idea of the language itself. And that is, if you, during lookup, don't find a value, what it does is it creates one of these procedures and just puts the name of the variable you were looking up in it. Done deal. Now later, if you choose, so you might put it in hash tables or whatever, or might immediately get invoked. If you try to invoke it, then basically, it will first, forget this part for a minute. Well, this part's just an optimization. It says that it's foo or foo null. You know it can never be a reflective implication on an object, so it just always tries the default lambda. Otherwise, it tries to invoke it with the reflective implication subsystem. And if it works, great. It just returns the result. If it doesn't work, then it says that it's going to try the default lambda, which all that says is if I really do have a default lambda, and that was the case where I defined, you know, a procedure with the open parens, the lambdaless procedure, so to speak, the implicit lambda procedure, and it will use that. If otherwise, it really doesn't exist, and you'll have an undefined function. So this is really the trick right there. I'm going to skip over this part because I'm pretty much done here. But you can read it in the paper. But another nice thing about the system is this package import system, which if I were implementing another dynamic language, I might want to actually use something like this, but I think it has some value in its own right. But you can read this part in the paper. This is the thing that does the tail call in the code right now. But we'll skip that. And there's some stuff about implementing classes, which actually I've removed from the system. I did this clear back in 97, and I did it before there were really a lot of bytecode generators around like there are now. And so what I did is just had some templates for calling, and we use that. But it's just a mess when you're actually trying to debug your Lava code. Not the system itself, but the stuff you write. So I've actually thrown that out. Here's the story, the performance story. This theory calling TAC, this didn't come out very well in the PDF conversion. This is Kava running TAC. This is JSCHEME running TAC. And this is Lava running TAC. So you can see Kava's compilation strategy is definitely far superior. Now this is when I'm calling TAC and defining it with explicit lambdas, which means it never goes to the RI subsystem. These slides, this one right here, that thing right there is really this. So the scales change. Now if I call define TAC with an RI type of procedure, it gets a hell of a lot more expensive because it's got to go through this RI failure every time. Now I've done zero optimization on the system, So I just did a real quick experiment on the plane, and actually on the plane before doing the final submission of the paper, and I got this, you know, some pretty good speed up right away. So there's some, there's a lot of implementation tricks to do. So now I'm at the end of the talk. Now the future work is renewed focus, basically, on the language design to really, really get as close to Java as possible. I probably need to do what Pravathan was talking about, and that's maybe share his infrastructure and get some speed that way, but get the surface level language. The big thing I want to avoid is the two worlds problem, right? I don't want to have some Scheme, or I don't want to have some Java, and I want to be using all the tools and stuff, and to do that, I've got to really, underneath, somehow make the tools understand it. So the closer you are to Java, the better. And then there's some JSRs at some three different ones that have to do with supporting dynamic languages on the JVM, and need to look at those. And finally, so the main idea is it's a Lava is a Java in list prefix notation plus macros, procedures, lists, and symbols. And so it's an easy way for a Java programmer to have an entry into the list world. And you can go to lava.org and it starts you right out with the Java doc for the system. And what I mean, not the Java doc for the underlying implementation, but for what you would use as a user of the language. Any questions?
Left out type declarations for local variables because you have them in methods, etc. That seems like a significant omission.
Yeah, because right now I only have lets, and so basically I don't have type declarations for procedures or for local variables, only for the things that end up in classes, and that's basically a remnant of the way it's currently implemented. But I agree with you that it really should be consistent.
Very bad.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that one of your goals would be to maybe help people in the transition from Java to Lisp. But I'm actually not convinced that your stuff would help them. Because at many places, for instance, in your tiny little decisions, you actually keep the Java syntax only surrounded by parentheses. Like, for instance, when you write public static, class, blah, blah, blah. So this is not going to help them forward to the Lisp syntax. Maybe what you should do actually is you move the Java syntax and like explicitly draw the return, make public, static, stuff like that, actual Lisp keywords, you know. And just take the decision that you're not going to use the Java syntax anymore. Otherwise, why would people want to do that stuff?
Basically, so, well, yeah, why would they? The idea is hopefully they understand, you know, the things you get if I have one moment here. Here's an example that I did, and that's it. Like, this is something where I'm using Gina, you know, it's an RDF AL system from out of HP. And if you use that directly in Java, you really can't see the facts that you're trying to think. So this says, you know, I have a cosmology. And I have, there's different ways to do it, right? How did the Earth be created? Either from chaos or from ancestors or various things like this. And then if you want to ask questions about that, you can go over here. So this is one reason they might want to do it, because you get a lot more natural representation of these types of things. And also you get macros. So, but that one, I don't think you can convince somebody, because they don't know about it in advance. So how do you convince them of that? And that's always like the chicken egg part of Lisp.
We've got another talk in 5 minutes, so to preserve what's left of our break, we're going to have to let you speak to Harold outside this formal situation. Thank you very much.